weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to the gang on Drive for taking us through the afternoon here on 2FM. It's Friday the 22nd of November and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock, we're going to talk all of the weekend's Premier League action with Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan. We'll hear from Ireland rugby captain Caelan Doris ahead of tomorrow's game against Fiji and also get the views of Shane Byrne. Plus, we've Jane Mangan on the weekend's racing and Morris Brosnan on the AFLW preliminary finals. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200 and we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. Alan Cawley is with me in studio on this cold Friday night. All I'm thinking is, Al, is please let all the games go ahead this weekend.
I know, Storm Bert is going to have a big say in that. Evening, Marie, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Yeah. I'm looking forward to a weekend of action, but I'm sensing, though, that one when Storm Bert actually lands, that we might get a bit of a reality check of what might go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's certainly going to be the case. But we've had a lot of these storms in recent times, Marie, and they never really are cracked up to what they're supposed to be, are they? Maybe I'm putting the mockers on it now, but hopefully that's not the case and everybody gets their games and pitches and whatever the case may be tomorrow. And of course, Ireland, the big rugby match is on. Yeah. Will that go ahead? Stuff like that. Hopefully racing, Jane, we'll chat to later on. Because we're kind of kicking into the national hunt season now, beginning to take off. But they want rain. Jane was on here a couple of weeks ago giving out that there was no rain. So they want rain and that will suit them. But yeah, hopefully everything that's planned, because we always have busy weekends that we love to look forward to, Marie. So hopefully they all go ahead.
Yeah, well, either way, the Ireland rugby match will go ahead. Ireland captain Caelan Doris was out for the captain's run today. He spoke to the media, Michael Corcoran, he spoke to actually, and he feels that fighting talk from the Fiji camp has added a bit of an edge to the game tomorrow. Let's hear what Caelan Doris had to say on the captain's run.
Yeah, it's been a good one. Obviously cold weather, but a few good sessions still. There's excitement building now as we're in the Aviva. Looking forward to an afternoon kickoff, which will be a bit different to the last couple of weeks, but looking forward to be back out here in front of a full crowd against a Fiji side who are playing good rugby at the minute. You look at their pace and their skills, but also their power, so it's going to be a test.
And they are a testing team, aren't they? They kind of test you the way nobody else does. It's important you don't get involved in playing the way the game that they want to play it.
Yeah, obviously they play quite a loose game, which works very well for them. Lots of offloads, keeping the ball alive, not a whole lot of structure, which is the way they've always played, and it works really well for them. So the test for us is to stick to what we do and stick to our basics, ball control, playing what's in front of us. Plus passes, playing to width when it's on, but not trying to push things.
The last couple of weeks has been all about yourselves in terms of growth and improvement within this group. That was noticeable for last week for a good part of the game. You'll be looking for something similar this week.
Definitely, yeah. Like how we started last week was very pleasing. It's about continuing that for a full 80-minute performance or as close to as possible. Discipline has been one big area over the last couple of weeks that there's been a lot of focus on, so hopefully that will be improved as well.
And how do you try to control that, if you understand what I mean? I mean, it was 13 penalties the last couple of weeks.
Not being desperate, building the right habits during the week in training, mentally being fully switched on, taking an extra step around the breakdown, being offside, making good decisions at the breakdown. It's simple things, but they compound.
Can I talk to you about the two new caps, the lads starting, Gus and Cormac, and what they bring to the party?
Yeah, two confident lads. They've both been playing really good rugby for their respective provinces. Izzy's obviously a great athlete, played a bit of sevens, got a lot of pace for a forward, but also very skillful and a good head in him as well. Gus, obviously only 21, he's had a very steep rise to where he is now, but he's a confident guy and he's been training really well, so looking forward to seeing both of them tomorrow.
And just a final word about the weather. You'll have to play the conditions as well. I mean, it's Baltic at the moment. It could be lashing rain tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely it's a factor that we have to consider. If it's wet, territory comes into it a little bit more. Discipline is even more important. Not being loose and turnover ball are obviously going to be big factors as well, so yeah, we'll have to consider that definitely.
Yeah, they'll definitely have to consider the weather, that's for sure. Now, we're going to talk about the game. I'm delighted to say that Shane Byrne is with us on the line. How are you, Shane?
I'm very well, and yourself?
I'm here with Alan Cawley now, and Alan was really curious about what this fight and talk was from Fiji, and he got a great kick out of finding out that all it was that Fiji called him vulnerable twice.
That's enough for any coach, there's no doubt about that. Look, I suppose there's the air out there. Ireland have been a very formidable side over the last few years, but everybody would have to admit the last two games, they haven't been where they wanted to be. Look, there's a few positions that we're transitioning in. There's no doubt about that. But we haven't been the slick attacking machine that strikes terror into defences. We haven't quite got there in the last two games. And that's probably what they're leaning towards a little bit. But that's enough for Andy Farrell to pin on the board probably and get the lads riled up.
Al, is it enough?
Come on, Shane. The world we live in, they're vulnerable and all of a sudden it's fighting talk. I've heard it all, Shane. I've heard it all.
Rugby players are very polite, Alan. Much more
good
polite
lads,
than soccer players.
Good lads, but yeah, fighting talk. I thought they said something really terrible about them the way they were going on.
Anyway, Shane, so look, we know that Ireland aren't as fluid in certain areas as they have been in the past. Is it a case, though, that teams are just figuring them out a little bit, or do we not have the calibre of personnel, or maybe the team just aren't functioning as well as they used to?
I think a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B, what you just said there. I think that we're not quite where we were. I think the November internationals have come with a big bang stepping into the New Zealand game. We probably would have preferred a warm-up game running into that, as they had running into our game. And against Argentina have played some very good rugby throughout the season, and it was a huge defensive effort to get that win out. But yeah, we definitely aren't as slick in attack, and the big debate obviously going on is the 10 debate and what they bring to the game, and it's going to continue on with Sam a bet against a different style of defence tomorrow. That it'll be something that will obviously be watched very, very closely, because he certainly has that skill set, that Johnny Sexton skill set, that brings the ball to the line with three or four options around him and will selflessly wait until the absolute last minute to make his decision, make his pass. And that terrifies defences, because he's perfectly willing to take the hit while putting someone away. And in the brief instance we saw of Sam on the park, we saw him do that twice, I think it was, in the game. And that's little things like that just are good signs for going forward, but they're not striking with the other two guys just yet.
Is it a concern, or is it just a transition period that we don't need to worry too much just yet?
I think addressing the concerns, I think, is probably why Andy Farrell has gone the way he did with the selections. I think, you know, bringing in two new caps, a new starter, you know, I think he's making a statement that, no, look, the depth is there. I think he made a mistake with the bench against New Zealand, going the old school route and a bench to defend the lead, which wasn't what it was at all. We needed something. We needed a huge impact from the bench. And I think with that in mind, he's probably changed the plan he had, that he would have gone for selection throughout these November internationals. And, you know, look, we all know that the conveyor belt is there, but you have to give them experience. They have to get in the park, and they have to show that they're able to play at the standard that Andy Farrell has had this team at. But make no bones about it, it's very hard to maintain the position we have been in, particularly tiny player pool of players that we do have, but there's no reason to think that we're under threat of slipping down the levels at the moment.
What do you think of all of the changes? It is quite a lot when you consider that Fiji are a good team as well.
Yeah, well, listen, we all know Fiji have had a good tour for so far, you would say, barring the Scotland game, wins against Spain, yeah, we know that, but particularly wins against Wales. Fiji always bring what Fiji bring to the table. If you allow them into a game, if you allow them the space to do what they want to do, they're one of the most potent attacking teams in throughout any level of rugby, because there's no direct structure to what they do. They very much play off the cuff. So if you allow the game to go that way, they will absolutely thrive in that. And they've come here pretty much fully loaded. This is, you would have seen that before, like the Welsh game is obviously a bonus for them, the result they got there. But they would have seen Ireland been at the time when they were selecting their squad, the number one seed in the world, and they would have gone, right, this is a team we're going to go for, we're going to target and see where we end up. But it's very much going to be down to Sam and the new caps just to settle in very, very early and stick to the Irish game plan. That's the key to this. Stick to your game plan. Stick to your defensive plan. Don't get mixed up in the way the Fiji play. I haven't played against them a few times. It's very hard. They do suck you into that. You saw it against Wales, that Wales just couldn't stick to their own structures, and Fiji ran riot. And that's something that Ireland just can't do, can't allow happen.
Okay, so how do you think it's going to go then with all of that in mind?
Well, with all that in mind, like, I think Ireland are still smiting a bit from the first two games. I don't think they're happy with the way they've played. I think there's a big performance in this squad. Like I've just said earlier on, I don't think the doomsayers are quite right just yet. I still think Irish rugby is in rude health, and hopefully we're going to find that form tomorrow against Fiji.
Score prediction?
Oh, yeah. Plus nine, I'm being concerned, plus nine to Ireland, I'll be happy. You know what I mean? But let's hope it's more than that. Let's hope it's a great day with a great band of rugby, despite the horrendous weather conditions.
we're all sitting on the couch anyway, watching it. For anyone who's brave enough to go out for a play. Shane Byrne, thank you as always for that. I really appreciate you taking our call. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us because we'll be talking about all of the news from the AFLW after these.
RTE
2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So it is a big weekend in Australia for the ALW with the eight Irish players still in contention for premiership medals with the preliminary finals on. So there's two really big games, North Melbourne against Port Adelaide and Brisbane Lions against the Adelaide Crows. I'm going to talk through all of this with Morris Brosnan of The Examiner. How are you, Morris?
Great, thanks, Marianne. How about you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me. And I'm going to get into all of the women's action in just a minute. But I want to talk to you first about the news that broke earlier today that Eamon Armstrong, Meath under 20 footballer, is going to move down under. He is signing for the Aussie Rules side St Kilda, which is a great opportunity for the young Meath player, but no doubt a huge blow for Meath as well. Tell us a little bit about this move, Morris.
Well, yeah, the first thing is it's an enormous blow for Meath. There's no getting away from that. I think the particularly cruel part of it is that they had one generational talent who was earmarked very early on in Connor Nash, and he has since gone on to have an incredibly successful career with Hawthorn. And you watch this under-20 team that came along this year and ended a 23-year wait for a Leinster title, and Eamon Armstrong was at the heart of that. He was Leinster Player of the Year.
Wow.
It's worth remembering he was 17 at that stage. So, I mean, he really was earmarked to go on to bigger and better things. And it's confirmed today. This had been on the grapevine for a couple of weeks now, it should be said, that he's going to go next year. So he's going to stay and do his leaving cert, and he'll go out to St Kilda afterwards. They already have one Irish player there in Cork's Liam O'Connell. But yeah, it's a huge blow for Meath. A guy who looks primed to succeed in the AFL, it should be said. He seems to have all the physical attributes, everything you hear about him. Otherwise, he seems to have his head really well screwed on. So it's an incredible opportunity for him, but it's an enormous blow for Meath.
Yeah, huge. And I was just reading about him. He represented the Republic of Ireland at soccer at underage level as well. So he's clearly one of these gifted athletes who's good at everything, no matter what he turns his hand to. What do you think is the big attraction going down under? Is he physically suited to the game? Is it the lifestyle? Is it the weather? What do you think it is?
I think the fact, the main thing, and you get this team, any of the players you talk to, men and women, is that they can live a professional lifestyle. So they get a chance to experience what exactly it is like to be a professional athlete, which is a lot of something people dream about since very early on. It's obviously not achievable or attainable within the GAA anyway. And this is the next best thing. So, what's the worst case scenario? The absolute worst case scenario is that you spend 2 years as a category rookie, you get to experience a professional setup, you bring all that expertise and knowledge back and can plug yourself back into a Meath setup. The best case scenario is that you can go on to have a decade long career in a professional environment. So you've seen, from a Meath perspective, you've seen the best of both worlds there. You've seen a guy like, as I mentioned, Conor Nash, who's gone and been phenomenally successful. A guy like Keane McBride got incredibly unlucky with COVID and that disrupted his development, but he's come back and he's since rejoined the Meath setup, and I've no doubt he'll have success there as well. So you look at it either way, and I think it's a win-win, really.
Okay, let's move on to the women's action this weekend. So what's happening and who's still involved down there?
Yeah, it's an interesting, this, if you're not a fan of AFLW, this is kind of the time to tune in, because it's when the best of the, this has happened in any expanding league. This is the time when you actually get really entertaining, dramatic games. Whereas the league is still, because it's still a relatively new sport, you still have kind of a bottom tier of teams who, mm-hmm. like I think this year you had three teams who won a game each effectively. So you still, there's a real gulf between the top and bottom, but by virtue of the fact that we're at final stage now, that we're at semi-final stage, the teams who are left are really good. So you look at the first game tomorrow, Port Adelaide against North Melbourne, and that's, you know, North Melbourne have a strong Irish pedigree. They've been absolutely incredible this year. Port Adelaide have no Irish interest, but still an amazing story. They bet Hawthorn last week, which is a club of Anya McDonough and Aileen Gilroy, two Irish players there who were having a sensational year. They were 22 points up going into the third quarter and ended up losing by one. It was the biggest comeback in the history of the competition. We've never seen a collapse like that before. So those two teams are going to play each other tomorrow. And in the other leg, then you've got two of the most successful teams in the history of the competition, really, in Adelaide and Brisbane. You know, both teams are winning premierships hand over foot. A huge amount of Irish influence there. So from a bunch of different perspectives, if you're so minded, if you're looking for some drama sport, I'd be reasonably confident you get it in at least one of these games.
And in terms of Irish interest then, obviously so many familiar names down there. Who can we look out for if we're tuning in?
So the North Melbourne have Vicky Wall and Erica O'Shea. So Vicky from Meath, who has returned to the sport after initially trying to make the Irish Olympic Seven squad, is a sensation, it should be said. Has somebody that the Australian media in particular have really taken a fancy to. Erica O'Shea became the youngest ever player when she initially joined. They do have players on their extended panel as well. So Niamh Martin will be an emergency sub from Tipperary. So there's a small chance you might see her this weekend. And Brahim Bogue is also on their extended squad. Port Adelaide don't have any Irish influence. Brisbane is probably the one that has commanded the most headlines here, just in the fact that you'd someone like Jennifer Dunne, who made history to win a title with Dublin and then go back and win a premiership in the same season. And they're looking to build now, has been remarkable success. Orla O'Dwyer, who I think has probably been the most successful Irish player to go down when you look at her, the stretch of consistency particularly. And she's consistent at the top level of the game. So she's playing for a club who have an incredible ability to maintain that top tier status. And then finally, you've got Adelaide and Niamh Kelly, who again from Mayo has come and been just a revelation for them, been really, really impressive. And they've got Amy Boyle Carr as an emergency sub as well. So plenty of interest there.
Loads,
on
three
of the four teams.
I guess when there was so many players down there, there was always going to be significant interest still at these kind of closing stages. And just in terms of what's coming down the track, how long more are we going to be in a situation where we can have players combining both seasons, do you think, this AFLW and the ladies football?
It's a really good question, and particularly because that's the conversation that is dominating even Australian media right now, is what it means for Irish players. So on Tuesday it was confirmed that they gave the dates for next season, that they're going to start in early August. It's going to be a 12-week season, but the number one consequence, and this is not just framing it from an Irish perspective, this is what's the conversation that's happening in Melbourne right now, is what does that mean for Irish players who are trying to do both? Because you're right, you know, you're at the border there. There's not much more give. If you're talking about starting in early August, it means teams who are involved in the latter stages of the championship here are going to have players effectively no pre-season if they want to do that. Is that really doable? A lot of clubs, I think, would argue no. So I think that point has come. It's a point we've been anticipating for a long time, obviously, but we're there now. The days of what we've seen the last couple of years, and it's been, you know, some of the players we've mentioned, the likes of Jenny Dunne, for example, what they've done is phenomenal, but I don't see the leeway to do that there anymore, basically after this year, to be honest, because if you're trying to go into an expanding league and trying to come in without any preseason, you could have a situation where you've got players coming off a plane and being expected to tug out for the first round of a league a week later, which I just don't think is going to happen.
And Morris, am I right in suggesting it'll be the Australian clubs that will be making this decision, because it'll be them who'll be losing out on the pre-season?
Unfortunately, yeah. And as the league is still, it's still semi-professional. So one of the reasons why it was so good that they gave dates early, and I mean, early sounds kind of ridiculous when you're talking, but we're talking about the end of one season, you would assume that they would get these dates. But they, because of what has happened the last couple of years, they have been very late to give actual fixtures. But the fact that they've given them now means that you've got teachers, for example, who know when they need to take leave, or people who work full-time jobs who now can plan around. They know it's going to be a 12-week normal season, and hopefully they'd be involved in finals after that as well. So there is a bit of it's much easier to plan. But from a club's perspective, that also means that they want access to their players around that window. So they're fully entitled that, as we've seen, what has started off as 1-year contracts, we're now getting to a stage where it's 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence of that, they feel like they have a bit more entitlement to access to their players, and they don't want them to be pressing. I do think there are some clubs, no more as there are some AFL clubs who allow their players to play for their clubs in the off season, there are some clubs who will do everything in their power to let players play for their counties if they want to. So I wouldn't be one bit surprised, for example, if you see Ashley Maloney from Geelong, but also from Tipperary, back for their county, because it means so much to her, and they're a club who are a bit more progressive about this kind of stuff. But there are other clubs who understandably are going to say, we need you here for a pre-season to plan for our upcoming campaign, and that might mean the give isn't there.
Yeah, and I guess you can see both sides of it, really. Interesting times ahead for sure. And look, women are always looking for professionalism, and that is what's coming. And it's just growing all of the time. So it's really hard to get that balance. Maurice Brosnan, thank you for all of that. And looking forward to seeing how those games will be. Checking in with you again soon, no doubt. We're going to take a break, but then it is time to talk football. We'll be looking ahead to all of the weekend's big Premier League fixtures, and also talking Ireland-Bulgaria in March.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Well, a little bit earlier today, the Republic of Ireland found out who they're going to be playing in their UEFA Nations League BC relegation promotion playoff in March, and it is Bulgaria. Alan Cawley is with me, and Fergal Brennan joins us on the line as well. Al, Bulgaria, tell me everything I need to know.
Yeah, not the worst draw, Marie. I suppose when you look at the teams that we could have got, Slovakia were the highest ranked. We all saw them in the Euros, and I think this certainly would have been a step above us. So it was Bulgaria who we were drawn against. And if you look at the group that they're coming from at the moment, they're in obviously League C, so they're in a group with Northern Ireland, Belarus, Luxembourg, and they finished on 9 points in that group out of 6 matches. Far from free scoring, Marie. They've only scored 3 goals in the 6 matches, so that bodes well. And they've only conceded 6, which you could say that they're not bad defensively, I suppose, based on that. But they are playing against lesser opposition than what we faced. They had 3 draws, they won 2 matches, and they did lose 5-0 to Northern Ireland only a couple of months back. And Northern Ireland, to be fair, have been playing very well.
Northern Ireland.
They have been playing very well, but again, you have to put it into context that it's a league below the level that we're playing, obviously against much sterner opposition we're facing. So I think it's a reasonable enough draw. I think the Irish team will fancy their chances, but I have to be honest and say, Marie, even though we are playing against higher opposition in League B, I think we're a League C team.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of discourse online about that earlier today. Where is it best for us to be?
Yeah, now when I mean that, I think it's best for us playing, for us to improve and to get better. And I would say this at every level of the game, from kids right up to League of Ireland level, playing against better teams in Europe, or international teams playing against better teams. The only way you're going to improve, I think, is playing against better opposition. But the flip side of that, and the question that you're asking, I'm not saying, basically, I think we're a League C team based on all the stuff that we've seen over the last kind of 2 or 3 years and where we're at. But to answer your question, and I suppose the debate around, are we better off dropping a level or are we better off staying where we are, I think because things have been so bad of late and to maybe get us out of the rut that we're in, and to get us into in a position where we could maybe build a little bit of confidence, because we've got so used to being losing and being deflated after results, that I don't think it would be a bad thing if we were playing against teams of a similar standard, which I think League C is a similar standard for us right now. As much as it pains me to say that, you have to be realistic, Marie, and we see the games against all the teams that we've played. Finland passed us off the park last week, and I don't think Finland are any great shakes, to be honest with you. So I think, based on what we've seen over the last 2 years, I don't think it would be a bad thing just to try and rebuild again and maybe start from scratch and try and get the thing moving again. build a bit of confidence, get a few results, like what we see with Northern Ireland now, and all of a sudden there's a feel-good factor around them. You know, so maybe that's but I do think if you were to ask me based on, I suppose, teams and young kids growing up and play against better teams, that's the only way you will learn, definitely.
Fergal Brennan is with us on the line as well, journalist on Merseyside. Fergal, what are your thoughts on where Ireland should be playing their football? What league?
I do see what Alan says in terms of the current position and the possibility, obviously, of slipping down into League C. But I still look at League B and it's not the absolute top level. I know, obviously, England were in the group this time round. That was a bit of an anomaly because they wouldn't have expected to get relegated during the last set of Nations League. I would still say that Ireland, based on the good stuff that we've seen over the last six games, are probably just about a League B team. It's very tight. It's very close. I don't think there's a great deal between the players, certainly in terms of the strength and depth. And Jaime Helgrimsson has made that very, very clear. But yeah, I would still say a League B team, just about. I think if everything comes together and clicks, I think there's far more about the Irish team than Finland. That wasn't necessarily the case over the two games, but I still think that they have the potential to be better. And I just think it's a better target to be aiming at a Greece rather than in League C, where expectations are automatically then cut. I understand that nobody likes game after game losing, but I also think that can be based on the group that you end up in. England being in League B was a real freak of a situation. It's not normally a team of England's level that are there. It's normally a Greece and a someone who's kind of maybe 10 to 20 or 10 to 30 in the FIFA rankings. And I think that's an achievable target for Ireland to measure themselves against, and ultimately in however long's time, try and chase down.
But against Greece, we were destroyed in every match that we've played them. So I know what you're saying, Fergal, that's an achievable target. But we're a million miles off Greece, never mind England. And that would be my argument to it. I'm going through the teams here. Like, if you look at the teams in League B that top the group, in Group 1, Czech Republic, Ukraine, yeah, you could say we could be competitive against them, but are we better than them? Not in a million years at the moment, unfortunately. Georgia finished third in Group 1, and Georgia were the story of the Euros. They were absolutely brilliant. Yeah. They're miles ahead of us. So then you get to our group. Even if you look at Group 3, Norway, like Norway, Odegaard, Haaland, like they have quality players, Sorloth, young lad, Austria, they're ahead of us at the moment. Slovenia finished third in that group, and I thought they were decent in the Euros. So I just think, I would have always said, Fergal, up to now, To be better and to improve and develop and all that, as I said, from underage right up to senior level, whatever the level of football, the only way you're going to learn and improve is playing against better players and better teams. I just think because things are so grim and bleak at the moment for us that we just can't continue on the spiral that we're going of just losing and losing and losing and not seeing any light at the end of the tunnel. Whereas if we were to maybe drop down, which, as I said, it pains me to say, I never thought I'd see the day where we're kind of saying this, that we might be able to build the thing back up from there. I don't know. It's just so grim at the moment.
And it just feels as well, Al, that it's almost inconsequential because there's just so many problems underneath as well. So that even whether we play in B or C, like, is anything going to change? I don't think anything's going to change unless things start changing from the ground up.
Yeah, and how long have we been saying that, Marie? And I see even in terms of domestically here, and Will Clark putting out a tweet this morning. Did you see that tweet just about the rankings and the correlation between where you're ranked and to qualify for a World Cup? And we're way off that. And also in terms of the players that you have playing in the top five leagues in Europe. We had 49 back in 2002. We have 16 last year. And there's a clear correlation between players playing in the top five European leagues and teams that qualify for World Cups. And unfortunately, Marie, until things improve, and again, it's a broader debate and discussion around investment, the election is next week and we're crying out for that kind of stuff, I think people are beginning to get it, but I still don't think they get it as much as what we're saying in terms of things won't improve until that side of things. So you can talk till the cows come home about Bulgaria in a playoff or Nations B or Nations C, but all the stuff that you see at grassroots level and all the way up, we're a million miles off.
Yeah, I don't even think at this stage beating a Bulgaria would paper over any cracks, because the cracks are crevices. Okay, we'll leave that for now. We're going to look to the Premier League, because this weekend it's the dawn of a new era. It might Manchester United. Well, I'm sure that's what Manchester United fans are hoping. It was a big day today. I was watching quite a lot of Sky Sports News, and there was a big build up to Ruben Amorim's very first press conference, very first pre-match press conference. So he was out speaking to the media, lots of interest in that, and he believes that he's the right man to take this Manchester United squad and the club back to the top. Let's hear a bit from him from today.
I'm a little bit a dreamer, and I believe in myself. I also believe in the club. I think we have the same idea, the same mindset, so that can help. But I truly believe in the players also. I know that you guys don't believe a lot in these players, but I believe a lot. I think we lose the ball too often, and we have to keep the ball. We have to be better on running back. I think that is clear for everybody. And we have to be very good in the details. Sometimes we are hoping to change a lot of things, big things. I think it's the small things.
As a coach, you have to choose one way or another. I choose always 100% our way. I prefer to risk a little bit, but to push in the first moment. If they feel that since first day, I believe so much in our way of playing, they will believe too. So there is no second doubts, no second way. It's one way, and we are going to do it. We will adapt some players because you don't have the right profile. This team was built for a different system, but like I told you guys already, it's the same thing playing with five or four. The principles are the same. The positioning is a little bit different. But maybe on Sunday you will see the list of players, the starting 11. You don't feel a lot of change, but you will feel it in the game during the positioning, in the way they receive the ball or to cover the ball. You will see some changes.
Alan, is it wishful thinking that he might be able to reinvent the wheel with the squad that he has?
I'm very hopeful, Marie. I really like the interviews. I like the way he speaks. He speaks with authority. He speaks very clearly in terms of the message that he's trying to get across. And it's not complicated. It's very simple. He spoke there about we need to be better running back, recovery runs. The most basic thing in the world, Marie, and that's something when you watch Man United when the ball is turned over and they look so lethargic and so kind of disinterested in wanting to work hard, that he's going to obviously emphasise stuff like that. Also about giving the ball away too much, so there'll be a focus on possession and holding on to the ball, which you would expect from a European coach of that standard as well, with an emphasis on possession. So I'm very, very hopeful. He did mention the fact, and I think it's good for the players to hear this, that he pointed out to the media that you don't have much belief in the players, which they don't, but I have belief in the players. Mm-hmm. And that's important for the players to hear that, and I'm sure he's reiterating that message to all these, because a lot of these players I think aren't good enough for Manchester United. But what they will want to see from the new manager is that it's a clean slate and a fresh start for them all, and it's up to themselves. He will give them the opportunity to prove themselves. It's up to them after that, Marie. So I think the players will be delighted with that as well, in terms of the opportunity that's there for them. It's going to be a difficult job, everybody knows that, but for the first time ever since Alex Ferguson has left, and probably Moyes, because I always had huge respect for David Moyes, but since Moyes, if you like, I always felt the elite managers that came in, Manchester United got them at the wrong time in their careers. They were never really prime Mourinho or prime Van Gaal. Whereas I think you're getting a manager here who was looking like, obviously feeling this is his big job to really kind of stamp his authority all over it and European football. And I'm very hopeful.
Are you as optimistic as Alan Fergal?
To an extent, I really would agree with the point that he speaks with confidence. We saw that, obviously, there's been a lot of attention on his press conferences in his last couple of weeks at Sporting Lisbon. There's been so much surrounding how he carries himself, how he gets his messages across to the players and the media. And I think he really does believe in himself, not just the tactics that he wants to implement, but that his decisions are the right ones. And I think that's so important at Manchester United, and Alan's obviously indicated it there, that United have had successive managers where you never felt that they were quite believing in themselves, what they were saying, what they were doing, what they were asking of the players. Amorim's come in, the first decision obviously that he made was to remove Ruud van Nistelrooy. That was probably expected, but that's still a big show to make. A guy who's come in on an interim basis, was unbeaten, really popular with the fans, and he said to him, thanks for everything you've done, but we're doing things my way. The club are backing me to do this, and this is what I want to do. And some of the clips and some of the reports from training over the last few days have been really, really interesting, because he's assessing players not necessarily based on how talented they are, because there's talented players in that Manchester United squad, no doubt. He's assessing them based on their ability to enact his plan. And that's what is going to be really, really interesting, because there's numerous players in that United squad that have been underperforming for a very, very long time. Amorim is a manager that won't accept that. And he certainly won't accept his ways, his tactics, his policies being questioned. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting who is still at Manchester United, not just at the end of January, because it's unlikely there'll be major changes in the middle of the season. But at the start of next season, I think we could see some really big established names at Manchester United leaving the club if Ruben Amorim gets wheels under this.
Alan, I'm really curious to see if there's consequences for the players, because I've often felt that whether it was a clip of a recovery run or lack of one, and the players didn't ever seem to get hooked off when they should have gotten hooked off. So to see if he's a little bit more ruthless than Ten Hag, I think it wouldn't be a bad starting point.
Absolutely, Marie. That should be the starting point for every manager, and that's where managers fall down massively. Now, they'll argue, oh, the players have a lot of power nowadays, but if you don't have accountability, you have absolutely nothing. And I go back to Dalot, his mistake recently there, the game against Brentford, and the lack of effort was a disgrace. And where was he in the European game the following night? As you said, picked in the team, lining out. So you can't have that, Marie, and I don't think this manager will allow that. If he's one of the elite managers that everybody is saying he is, in the category of a Guardiola or a Klopp or all the elite ones that we go back to, I'd even put Slot into that, because I don't think he suffers fools. You can't, Marie, because you won't survive. Absolutely not. And I look at this manager, and even from listening to him, I actually think 100% there will be consequences for these players. And that's been missing from Manchester United. There has to be standards. And if you drop below the standards, Marie, you shouldn't be there. And I think he will absolutely emphasise the standards from day one. I'm sure he's already doing it. I've seen some of those clips on the training field already. He's coming across really, really well. It's only training. We'll see on Sunday. The only thing they're playing against Ipswich, and Kieran McKenna knows every weakness that Manchester United have, having been there for so long. But I do like this manager so far, and I am hopeful. Probably the most hopeful I've ever been since, as I said, Ferguson has left.
Well, the home farm under 12s wouldn't get away with
the lack of effort. They'll tell you. There's standards in place. There has to be.
Okay, let's move on to Liverpool. Well, to Caoimhín Kelleher, I guess. So they play Southampton, and Alisson is returning to fitness, but Caoimhín Kelleher is set to continue to start for Liverpool. Arne Slot was asked about him today. Let's hear what he's to say.
He's back in training with the goalkeeper coach. He's not training with the team yet, but that is expected to be done soon. And then let's wait and see where he is in terms of match fitness. But he's getting better and better, but not ready to play Sunday.
Fergal, Caoimhín Kelleher is still getting the opportunities. So, I mean, is he starting to stamp his authority on that position, do you think? Or as soon as Alisson is ready, will it be back to normal?
I do think it will be the latter, and I have said that a few times.
Been constantly saying this, Fergal. Give Caoimhín a chance.
he deserves his chance. He's in the team. There's absolutely no qualms about him playing, and he'll play against Real Madrid in midweek and probably against Manchester City next weekend. But it's still with the situation of Alisson not being fit. My view on all this is the same all along. I still think that Alisson will be rotated back in. Slot himself has been quite clear on that. My longer term thinking on this is, are Liverpool becoming concerned about Alisson's injuries? Are they becoming more of an issue than they initially thought? Because this is the second time he's been injured already this season. We're not even at Christmas yet. This particular setback has been stretched by a week, been stretched by 2-3 weeks. Obviously, there's the situation with Mamardashvili coming in the summer from Valencia. But I would keep an eye on that. Are Liverpool becoming concerned that Alisson is struggling physically with what they're demanding from him, which is pushing for the Premier League, pushing for the Champions League? Kelleher's been fantastic for Liverpool. There's no doubt about that. He's demonstrated the level of goalkeeper that he is for club and for country. But I still think, and Slot would, if you were to ask Arne Slot as well, I think he would say the same, that when Alisson is back, but crucially when he's fully fit and fully ready, I think he will come in. There'll be no chances taken, and that's why I think Madrid in midweek and City next weekend, Kelleher will probably keep his place. But the big question is, when Alisson is back, whenever that may be, that's going to be the question for Slot.
Kelleher has gone up on everyone's expectation or everyone's opinion of him is increasing week on week, though, Al.
100% Marie, because he's been outstanding. He really has. And I remember we had this chat last year and we were kind of, I remember the words I used where I was saying he needs to get himself to a level where he's actually competing with Alisson, not feeling like he's mm-hmm. the understudy. And I think he's at that point now, Marie. I totally take Fergal's point, and of course Alisson, world class goalkeeper, number one, get all that, but I finally think for the first time in his Liverpool career, because he's getting a run of games, maybe he's maturing and developing. We always praised him for his temperament, which is outstanding as well. Keller, even for a fella who isn't playing frequently, is able to come into the team. You look at the respect all the other players have for him as well. I do think he's getting to the stage where he's actually competing with Alisson now, and it will be interesting when Alisson is fit now, if he's back training. Obviously two huge games coming up during the week with Real Madrid and Man City, as Fergal said, so it will be interesting to see the decision. But I think Kelleher, and I've said this here in recent weeks, he's in a win-win, Marie, because unfortunately for him, he's not just competing with Alisson. Mamardashvili have spent the money, he's probably going to come back in, and he's maybe third in the pecking order as well as he's doing now. But in terms of other people and other clubs looking at him, he's putting himself into an unbelievable position to get a great move as well. So he's in a win-win at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Man City and Spurs is the big one tomorrow. Lots happening at Man City with Pep Guardiola committing a couple of years anyway to Man City. He was out in front of the media today as well, and he spoke about his new contract and promised that whatever happens to City in terms of possible future club punishments, he'll be there.
I say 6 months ago, 1 year ago, when everything, when all the clubs accused us to have done something wrong. So what happened? You got relegated. I will be here. Next year we'll come up to the, I don't know, the position of the conference they're going to bring us. We're going to come up and come up. We're going to come back to the Premier League. I'm here with that and I feel it now.
Yeah, Pep is going to spend almost a decade of his managerial career with Man City. Who knows what the future will hold for the club. But I guess in a way, Fergal, they need to start winning football games, because it's Liverpool who are in the driving seat at the moment. We're used to seeing Man City move through the gears. They haven't done that yet. Are they going to start tomorrow?
I think away from home against Tottenham, they haven't had the greatest record under Guardiola, but at home, particularly with Tottenham being a bit mixed this season, and they obviously got beat before the international break as well, you would expect the feel-good factor that it will be bouncing at the Etihad Stadium tomorrow. Obviously, that record of four straight defeats is the first time it's ever happened to Guardiola. There's been some whispers that maybe that even played a bit of a role in convincing him to get the pen in his hand and sign the contract, because I think sometimes with a manager of his level, he needs something or someone. In the past, it was Klopp pushing him to keep his standards, to keep the fire burning, and to set a challenge, to give something to chase and to give something to keep him with some skin in the game. I think in terms of his statement about the case over the 115 financial charges, that was very interesting, because the initial story when it broke was that he would sign a one-year contract with the option for another year, so that he would very much keep himself open to making a decision if a huge verdict comes their way. That's now not going to be the situation. So come what may, when the chips land on this one, Guardiola will be the Manchester City manager. And it's very difficult to call that, how that is going to play out, because it is unprecedented, the amount of charges, the amount of money involved, and obviously the length that it's taken to get to this stage. So I think he'll just be looking in little short-term blocks. They've got a really busy period between now and the end of the year. When the verdict arrives, probably looking from people I've been speaking to, at the start of 2025, there will be more legal challenges. It'll get kicked into the long grass again. There'll be various back and forth. So it's not going to be settled very, very quickly. And that will allow Guardiola to continue pushing for trophies, which ultimately is what he's in control of. So much of the other stuff he's rightly been criticised in some quarters for, but he has very little control over that.
Alan, as a regular visitor to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, what kind of Spurs do you think are going to show up tomorrow?
Marie, you could ask every regular visitor to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and ask them what Spurs would turn up, and nobody knows. And unfortunately, that's the problem for them. Even you look at their last 8 games in all competitions, they've won 4 and lost 4. So it's a mixed bag. On their day, they're as good as anyone. They play unbelievable football. But unfortunately, when that day comes is too infrequent, and that's why they're so inconsistent and up and down. And it's a pity, because I really like Postecoglou and I want to see it work and him work. But tomorrow could be fireworks in that match tomorrow. Obviously, Man City, there's a reaction that they're looking for, because they've lost their last two Premier League games, lost their last four games in all competitions. One of them was against Spurs in the League Cup there a couple of weeks back as well. So that could be 4-3, Marie, to anyone. I'm just expecting goals, a really exciting game. And I'd love to see Spurs hit some sort of consistency. Now that the international football is put to bed for a while, we can concentrate on the league stuff now. They can go hell for leather, the teams. Liverpool have obviously got off to an unbelievable start. Can they maintain that form? Can City get back on the right track? Can Spurs be consistent? Can Man United's new manager make a difference? All these questions, Marie, and they will all be played out in the next few weeks. I can't wait.
Brilliant. I'll see with us for a few minutes, because we're going to talk to Jane, but Fergal, thank you so much for our usual Friday chat. I'm delighted to say now that Jane Mangan is going to be joining us on the line. Al, I know you're excited as well about this weekend's racing.
Love the racing, yeah. I watched a good bit of it today as well, Jane. Ascot, very good.
How are you, Jane? Oh, we're going to be going back to Jane in just a minute. Alan, you can talk to me about the racing while we wait for Jane to come up on the line. What are you watching?
We've often said this about the racing. The National Hunt, Marie, that's where it's at. Over the jumps, that's the real racing. This flat stuff, never mind that. It's over the jumps, the real racing. Freezing cold, wintry conditions, mud splatter jockeys. We love it, Jane.
Do you, Jane? Is that what you're looking forward to?
there's a storm warning. There's inspections. There is... place is frozen, but that just means the good horses are going to run. And this weekend is three grade ones. And while there is one in Haydock, we may as well get that one out of the way.
Okay,
because the best ones are at home, right? The best ones are home. The Betfair Chase, there's two Irish runners of interest here. Willie Mullins has supplemented Capodanno for the race, and Gavin Cromwell sending across Limerick Lace. But I think they're going across there so that they don't have to compete in the John Durkin. There's obviously last year's King George winner, Shark Hanlon's Hewick, is probably the best of the Irish challengers going across. The last year's good novice from Dan Skelton's is actually favourite, Grey Dawning. But you've got Ahoy Senor and Brave Man's Game and last year's winner, Royal Pagai, in there. It's not a bad race, but I'll ask Alan, would any of them beat Factifoil, Gallop and Deschamps or Fast or Slow?
None of them, Jane. None of them.
I would tend to agree. So if anybody, if you are going to step out on Sunday, Punchestown is the place to go. If you can't step out, it'll be on RT2 television and you can stay warm. But there's nine runners declared for the John Durkin, and it's pretty staggering the level of quality in here. Willie's declared five. Willie Mullins, you're talking about managers there. I've been listening to you for the last 20 minutes. If Willie Mullins doesn't get manager of the year in Ireland this year, there's something wrong. He's declared five. He's got Factifoil last year's probably best novice chaser. Gallop and Deschamps, obviously dual Cheltenham Gold Cup winner. Grange Clare West, probably the most forgotten horse from last year. His last run, he beat Corbett's Cross and Florian Porter out of sight. They're probably the main trio from him. Faster Slow, last year's winner, and a brilliant record around the track of Punchestown. Derek O'Connor, booked by Martin Brazel. Our own horse at home, Faster Lands Tower, you know, dual grade one winning novice chaser. We're very excited to see him out again. And I know the way you're thinking for Gavin Cromwell and Keith Dunhue. It's just an absolute corker, this race. This is going to be the best race pre-Christmas run anywhere in Europe.
This is Barcelona, Real Madrid, Liverpool. This is the Malmery.
Stacked, by the sounds of it.
Stacked.
Absolutely. And only down the road from Imrie.
Jane, are you nervous about Spillane's Tower? How do you feel?
Well, I personally am not, but I'm not involved with him day to day. I'm sure the guys at home are. But I know they've been itching to get him started. You know, this time last year, we'd had two runs into him. You know, the prolonged drive spell has probably contributed to the fact that all of these horses are meeting in this race on this day because they haven't had an opportunity to run before now. And I suppose we're a little bit, we want to learn a bit more about him, if you know what I mean. We want to find out whether he's going to be able to swim with the Sharks. And the Sharks are Gallop and Deschamps and Faster Slow. They're the two standard setters. So you never, we can all get carried away with novices. And he was a very good novice. But we need to find out now if he can really match it with the big boys.
All right. Big weekend for you guys as well. So that's Sunday. And then we've Haydock tomorrow. And you mentioned the Morgiana as well.
Yeah, don't forget, big news today. Constitution Hill, lame after his bit of work, probably going to miss the Fighting Fifth next weekend. That leaves the door wide open on the champion hurdle spectrum, doesn't it? Well, the horse that I would love to own and is probably more consistent than any other horse in training, that is Stateman. He's chasing his 11th grade one race. He's always his starting point at the Morgiana hurdle. But this year's probably the strongest renewal that he's going to have started his year in. And the threat lies within. Glossy Mouth, the last year's Mayor's winner. She was emphatic in her own gender. She's now stepping into open company against the boys. Patrick Mullins riding for his dad. It'll be fascinating to see how she gets on. And Gordon Elliott is opted to run brighter days ahead in here instead of going across to the Fighting Fifth. She too has the benefit of a run and is a very exciting novice from last year. In total, there are 8 going to post, so that's great for punters who want each way betting. But Stateman, for me, is pretty unflappable. And the one thing we saw with Constitution Hill, whether he's lame or not after the race, after that bit of work the other day in Newbury, he didn't look invincible. He now looks beatable.
I saw the bit of work, Jane. Yeah, it wasn't the most impressive. And I listened to Nicky Henderson's interview today as well, and he seemed a bit deflated about the whole thing also.
You know, after the bit of work, they said they were happy and they said they were happy and they said they were happy. Stop. No, you couldn't have been happy with that. You couldn't.
Okay, well, on that note, we're going to go. Jane, thank you very much for setting us up for the weekend. Alan set us up for the football weekend as well. And we got a bit of rugby and some women's AFL as well. So we have loads to look forward to. So much sport. Andrew O'Connor will be here with Ruby on Monday, and Alan as well, looking back on all of the weekend's action. Blonde and Tracy and the official chart show are up next.
RTE 2FM.